Instead of getting bogged down in complicated investing concepts to achieve a bright financial future, our guests this hour say we should literally be focused on the big picture. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In this edition of On Your Money, our guests will explain how to create a prosperity picture to help bring one's goals into reality, and we'll detail some of the financial strategies to get there. And we will welcome your questions for them. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off this week, but we invited two financial experts to take his place. Let me welcome our guests. Ellen Rogan is a certified public accountant and a certified financial planner. She is a nationally known expert on living a life of success and prosperity. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
And Lisa King is with us, an executive director at Invesco Consulting, a national speaker and developer of educational programs for investors. Good morning.
Good morning.
And both are authors of the book, Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. Well, let's talk about, first of all, prosperity. Ellen, how do you define prosperity?
The interesting thing about how to define prosperity is it's really different for different people, and it tends to be a really broad definition. So when we're around the country giving workshops, we hear everything from money to wealth to happiness to contentment. And that's what's so wonderful about it, that it's so expansive versus just looking at the money part of things.
And we will get into some detail on picturing your prosperity in a moment. But for now, Lisa, what does that concept entail, picture your prosperity?
Well, it's really the idea of beginning with the end in mind and focusing on the end game. I mean, we all know cognitively that money is not an end in and of itself. Money is the means to the end. And yet, despite our cognitive knowledge of that, we tend to get caught up in the nuts and the bolts and the details and the potential stress around money, and it tends to take on a life of its own and be disassociated with why we want it in the first place. So this concept is all about focusing on the end game.
And I know you wrote the book with women in mind. Why did you choose to make women your target audience?
Women are in a really amazing position of power right now. You know, we see all kinds of really wonderful things going on with women and their money. We see them really stepping into their power in a way that they perhaps haven't historically. And some specific examples of that include the fact that women are, say, getting more college degrees than men right now. They're getting more advanced degrees. They are controlling, you've probably seen these numbers, 80% of all consumer purchasing in the U.S., and when you consider the size of the U.S. economy and the worldwide influence that kind of influence has, it's an amazing economic force that women are controlling. We see women in some demographic circles for the first time in history beginning to out-earn men. Now, overall, men still out-earn women, and we hope that that gap will close. But in some younger and urban areas, we're beginning to see women out-earning. So we feel like this is a special time for women, a great time to focus on what they can do with this power, do with this money, and really harness it to make whatever they're looking for happen.
Yeah. Do women, Ellen, typically harness this power?
Well, they're more and more they're beginning to. Traditionally, our financial services industry has been just more male dominated. There's still around 80% of financial advisors are men, and so the approach has been more masculine. So it's not bad. It's just been the way that it's been. And at times, many women have felt disassociated from the process. Sometimes I hear things like, oh, I just don't have a head for money, or it's boring, or I wish someone else would take care of it. But what we've seen over and over is that when women step into this and see how their money really supports everything that they care about in their lives for themselves, their family, and their community, and are able to look with a broader perspective, they realize they have amazing skills to be awesome at managing money. So I do think they're ready to step into this, and you know, part of what we were trying to accomplish with this, with our book and our process, is to have a way that really engages women and men in a much broader discussion of money.
Yeah, men can certainly read the book too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, but we do hear things in the news about women earning less money than men, that their retirement benefits upon leaving the workforce are less, especially if they have kids and so on. It is do women face different financial issues, pressures than men?
That's an interesting question because, yes, those are real statistics. But like anything else in life, is that going to be the most effective place for us to focus our attention on the deficit? You know, we always make an analogy here. If, let's just take ourselves out of this topic for a moment. If instead of talking about money, we were talking about, say, tennis, and we're coaching tennis players, and we know that we have some tennis players that maybe have dropped out of practice a little bit. They haven't practiced as much as their male counterparts. Maybe their serve isn't, you know, naturally as strong, whatever it might be. If we're the coach, is that where we want to focus? Is that where we want to focus our attention? Because that which gets focused on grows. So if we're going to focus on all of the challenges, it's possible, probable even, to get a little bit stuck. So what our philosophy is yeah, we know that. We have to deal in reality, of course. But let's take everyone's individual case. Let's build out what their future looks like, and let's help them use the tools and harness the energy that they need to make those things happen financially.
Yeah. Do men and women look at finances differently, Ellen?
From my experience, I see that women tend to see the forest for the trees more. They like to have the conversation about how money affects them in their life. And then, of course, I'm generalizing, so how it can be used as a tool. And I sometimes see men being more focused on and comfortable with focusing on, here's my investments, and using money as a scorecard. So I think in general, yeah, sometimes they do. But I will say, having said that, that when I get men engaged in this broader conversation, they really love it. I had a guy at a workshop say to me, you know, my whole life I've just been working really hard and saving and trying to get to retirement, but I never stood back and said, why? Like, what do I want that to look like for me? So I think that this broader conversation really speaks to men and women, even though our brains are wired differently and we tend to think about things in different ways.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Ellen Rogan and Lisa King. They are the co-authors of Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. And we welcome your questions for them at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, Ellen, I want to tell a little story here. My husband and I took a bike ride on the 4th of July, and we were on a rail trail, and we stopped at a beautiful, lovely lake, Rock Lake, in Lake Mills, Wisconsin, to take a rest. And we sat there, and we looked at all the people on their boats and in their kayaks and the lovely cottages on the shoreline. And I said to him, Let's have a cottage on this lake. Let's plan on having a cottage on this lake. And he said, "Yeah, we should." We were serious about talking about having that as a part of our you know, retirement. Is that what you mean by picture your prosperity?
That's such a great place to start, because I'm imagining that you and your husband, first of all, you're picturing yourself there. You're probably feeling how awesome it would feel to be actually have a home on that lake, experiencing in that time. That's one amazing way to do it, but you can also go through the same type of exercise without even having to be there. And our minds are really powerful tools. And brain research has really found this out, that through the process of picturing what you want, imagining it and feeling it as if it's happening right now, like you and your husband were able to do practically by being there, it starts the ability to have you seeing yourself in this situation and then actually begin the planning process. So having the ability to do it in person like that is awesome, but for all of us that can't necessarily be there in that moment but want that house on a cottage on the lake as well, you can do that by just using your imagination.
Yeah, so you could, so you're, if we want to picture our prosperity, we go sit down in a quiet room and just think about what we want in the future?
Well, that's one way to start the process. We actually encourage people to use images so to help confirm and really visualize and be able to do this in the future. So what we suggest is people actually create a literal picture, a prosperity picture. So in our book, we start with 32 images, but you can get these out of magazines or newspapers or your own photos. And to create an image. So some of you listening may have been familiar with vision boards. So this is where you take images from magazines and put them on poster board for inspiration. Well, we like to take this a step further and organize the images based on time frame and amount of money it'll take to reach the goals. So this can become the basis of a visual financial plan for yourself.
Yeah. And why, Lisa, do it this way?
There's actually some science underneath this. It's a fascinating area. It's widely understood now among scientists, according to a Harvard Med School author named Srini Pillai. His last name is spelled P-I-L-L-A-Y, in case folks are interested. But he wrote a book called Your Brain in Business. And that's one of the facts that he points out in his book, is that scientists understand that we stimulate the same part of our brain when we envision an action as we do when we actually complete that action. So stated in simple terms, if I asked you now to do something really simple like it, how would you think about how you would raise your left arm in the air? You are stimulating the same part of your brain that you do when you actually lift your left arm in the air. And so just that simple connection has huge implications for the real power of vision. And this is something that we find that any athlete immediately connects with. So if you ask any golfer, tennis player, quarterback, you name the sport, about their mental game or their visual game, they'll almost always light up, and they will say, absolutely. If I can imagine my gymnastics routine or my golf swing in pieces, and if I can go through that movement by movement without ever moving a muscle, I always have my best personal performance. You know, they'll have stories. And it's to the point where the U.S. Olympic Committee actually has a staff, a full-time staff of psychologists that do nothing but work with Olympic athletes on their mental game. And so the same that's true in that arena is also true for other areas of life, including our financial life. So the more that we think about and actually get into the detail and get into the weeds a bit about what this future might look like, we're actually increasing our chances of doing that.
We are talking with the co-authors of Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. Lisa King is an executive director at Invesco Consulting and a national speaker and developer of educational programs for investors. And Ellen Rogan is a certified public accountant and certified financial planner. And we welcome your questions for them. Do you do this? Do you try to visualize your prosperity, your financial future? What are your short or long-term financial goals? What questions you have on getting there? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.
Wonderful as money. There is nothing quite as beautiful as cash. Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money you can make a splash.
This is On Your Money without Kevin McKinley. Kevin is off this week. We have, though, two financial experts taking his place. They are the co-authors of Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality, talking about your financial big picture and how to get there. Welcoming your questions, too. We have open lines for you. If you have questions about picturing your prosperity or some of the money moves you might be taking, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guests are Ellen Rogan and Lisa King. Ellen, I'm thinking of this is cool to, you know, visualize my financial prosperity in the future. But I need to do more than think about it, don't I? I do have to know about the investing concepts to get there.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. Of course you do. And the benefit of picturing it gives you the motivation to do that. When we like to think that's a little bit more right brain creative, but we also have to get into the left brain side of things, the more tactical part of planning. And you know, one of the best places to start with that is to really look at where are you starting from. Right? So what do you own and what do you owe? What's flowing in and out? Kind of looking at the tactics of your actual financial situation so that you can begin to build from there.
Yeah. Maybe I should say, all right, so let's, I'm just using the example of, okay, let's say I'm picturing my prosperity and I really do want that cottage on the lake in my retirement. Then what? I mean, the practical step as to getting there.
Yeah, so the first thing I would recommend is, okay, so how much do you think that might cost to have the kind of house? Are you going to build it? Are you going to buy an existing house? Do you need to fix it up? How soon do you want to have that happen? And then from there, once you know the answers to that, then you can start to say, okay, well, I'd love to have it in 5 years, and it's going to cost a certain amount of money. And then you can work backwards and say, okay, what do you need to do to get from where you are now to having the house on the cottage on the lake in 5 years, for example?
Yeah, and then I need to see someone like you who knows what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a financial advisor can walk you through this process. There's also all sorts of online tools that can help you with this as well. And so part of that is to know if you're someone who is a do-it-yourselfer and loves to figure all this out on your own, or you want to have somebody walk through the process with you as well.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, anything to add to that process? Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't have your microphone on, Lisa. Go ahead.
It's interesting because this is an area where people consider these things, you know, pipe dreams. It's very easy to say, oh, someday I would like to have this cottage on the lake, but that's not realistic without ever really looking at whether it's realistic, without ever naming it. And if you can't name it and be intentional about trying to pursue it, of course it's not going to happen. By naming it and being intentional, it's not a guarantee, of course, but boy, do your chances increase. So really the steps that we're talking about are the first steps and putting together then, you know, a sensible plan that helps you increase your chances of making that goal happen. But also, and this is important, of course, also in a way that allows you to sleep at night. So if investing is part of the picture, which it is for most people, we always suggest that, you know, people look at their risk comfort level, of course, right? You don't want to have to wake up at 2 in the morning and chug Pepto-Bismol because you're worried about market fluctuations and you're not sure if this is going to happen and perhaps your money is at more risk than you're comfortable with. So you have to balance both of those things.
Yeah, and you know, I'm torn, though, too, because we have talked about, do we want the cottage on the lake or do we want to go on an exotic, trip somewhere wonderful, somewhere else in the world, which would maybe cost as much as that cottage on the lake every single year. How do you decide, Ellen, between, or maybe I want to do both, but that's not realistic?
Well, I think one of the first parts is to really assess, is it realistic? So one of the things that I recommend, or Lisa and I outline in the book, is to go through what we call a values-based spending plan. So that's looking at where money is flowing in and out now. We very deliberately don't call it a budget because we find that no one sticks to a budget, or very, very few people, and it doesn't feel fun. As Lisa likes to say, it's like eating celery at a pizza party to stand a budget. But having a values-based spending plan is to go through where all your money is going and then assessing, do you value where it is? So maybe that for you and your husband, you can do both. If you, and there's something else you're currently spending money on that when you really look at it, you really don't care about so much anymore. Maybe you did at some point in your life, and it, now it's not as important to you.
So then I can use that money for those trips I want to take.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. I think that people get into a habit of just kind of doing what they've always done and taking a step back and really looking at, are these things truly still important to you? It becomes much easier to make choices, because for most of us, there's not an unlimited amount of money that we can do just anything and everything.
Yeah. But then again, there could be some, I'm dreaming about the cottage on the lake or the traveling around the world when I retire, Lisa. But, some might be thinking, that'd be great, but I hope I can keep a roof over my head.
Sure, right. I mean, everyone is in a different situation, and yet everyone also has the ability to envision something different for themselves. So it really is a matter of getting in touch with what's most important and then aligning your practical tools. I mean, a great example of this that we actually write about in the book is a woman who lives in the Chicago area, and she had a beautiful home in the suburbs full of her children and so on, and then they grew up, and now they're young adults. And she realized, as she was looking at her quote-unquote fixed expenses, that her house was no longer the value to her that it was, as Ellen was just alluding to, and yet it was one of her biggest expenses between the mortgage payment, the upkeep, etc. And so she made a decision that many people wouldn't consider making. She looked at that and she said, you know what, I just don't care about this house. It's not as nearly as important to me as it was when the kids were younger. I'm working at a job that I'm not thrilled about. I'm, stressed out. I'm overspending on things like fancy vacations because I'm trying to placate myself, from this job that I'm not really happy with. And so she decided to sell her house, really downsized, moved into a much smaller condo in close to downtown, and saved a lot of money, ended up being able to get a different job and really making a big change in her life by just getting in touch with what's really important.
We are talking with the co-authors of Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. So do you have an exotic trip or a cottage on the lake or an early retirement that you are working toward? What is your prosperity picture? And any questions on how to get there or what are you doing to try to get there? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What questions do you have for our guests on creating or building your prosperity picture? We welcome them. And let's talk a little bit about does our visualizing our prosperity picture change at all if we are a couple? If this book is geared to women in many ways, what about my husband?
And so this process of picturing your prosperity is a wonderful way for couples to have a different kind of conversation about money. So if you create your own prosperity picture and your partner creates his or her prosperity picture, and then talk about them together, and really interesting things can happen just in terms of learning about each other. When I walk my husband Stephen through this activity, he had a sailboat image on there, and he said to me, yeah, I've always wanted to take a trip, a sailboat trip, with friends. Now, I've been married 27 years. I had no idea that was something that he was interested in. And I had another experience where I had a head of a major financial services company. This guy's been in the business for years, went home, did this prosperity picture with his wife, and told me that he has had the best conversation they've ever had in their entire marriage around money with this. It wasn't like the typical fighting. Sometimes there's someone who has more information than others about the details, and it's not always easy to talk to our partners about money, but this is such a fun and impactful way to have a different kind of conversation.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because another personal example is we have talked about, do we want to stay in our 1958 ranch home that is almost completely paid off, our mortgage is almost done, or do we want to downsize and go to that that condo downtown? How do we, Ellen, how do we decide?
Well, so it may be that some of it's getting into the part of your brain that might not be so logical, and you know, to actually do a prosperity picture and start to see what things come up. You know, I think when we try too hard to figure things out, it doesn't always happen. And when we're stressed about situations, when you're worried, you know, you're talking before about the person that's worried about keeping a roof over their head, or whether you're like more of a luxury kind of decision, if you will, do we stay or do we move to something else? The more quiet you can get, the more clear the answer becomes. And so actually, we talk about meditating as a financial strategy. It's not typically one that financial advisors recommend to their clients. But the more quiet you can become, those answers are there for you.
Interesting. So that yoga is good for both of us, too.
That's right. That's right. Physically and financially.
How often should we be looking at our prosperity picture? In terms of, you know, I mean, do we do this on a daily basis? Do we do this every quarter? How are we picturing that prosperity? How often?
We recommend that once you create this, that you put it somewhere where you can literally see it every day. And if you can do that, and it's not like you have to devote time to standing in front of your picture and looking at it, but if you put it in a place where you naturally walk by it anyway, it's on the fridge, it's in a closet door, whatever it might be, you're stimulating part of your subconscious brain that's actually responsible for making these things work. That part of your brain is called the reticular activating system, or RAS for short, and it more or less acts as a filter for letting information in that's important to you and keeping it out. And it all happens on a subconscious basis. And so it does things like, for example, we always talk about the new car phenomena. Usually if people buy a new car, they all of a sudden start seeing their car, you know, other people driving their same car on the road that they never saw before. And it's not as though they're consciously going out into the world and looking for how many, you know, Honda Civics they can spot, but all of a sudden they start to see them. And that's because it's become relevant to their subconscious, which can take information in and keep it out all the time, constantly working, even when we're sleeping. And what happens is when you put a picture up that means something important to you, you're actually stimulating that part of your brain. You're feeding it information in the same way you are that when you buy a new car.
Yeah, and we missed that, or at least I didn't ask you to explain that to listeners. We want to put our prosperity picture in a frame. We literally want to be looking at, what, a collage?
It's a collage of images. And what we recommend is that if you think of a frame broken out into four quadrants, four boxes, the bottom half are for your images that don't really require any money, and the top half are for images that would require money. The left side are for goals or images that you'd like to have happen sooner, say 5 years or less, and the right side, images 5 years or later. So you may have an image, for example, of a cottage on a lake in your upper right-hand quadrant. Would require probably money and might not happen right now. Where if someone wanted to start a meditation practice, maybe they have an image of a person meditating or a yin-yang sign, and that might be a lower left-hand quadrant because it doesn't really require any money, and they want to start now.
Yeah, and in fact, we just had a caller who dropped off who wanted to ask a little bit more about the meditating. Practical tips on meditating about our prosperity.
Yeah, so meditation is a practice that there's lots and lots of different ways to do it and to start. You know, for someone to start to even sit quietly for 5 minutes and just focus on your breath is a wonderful way to start. I have a meditation practice where I meditate 20 minutes a day, sometimes twice a day. And it's not so, I would say, that one of the things to do is to be quiet and meditate, and then at the end, what I do at the end of my meditation is where I focus on my goals. So it's not like for 20 minutes I'm focusing on a cottage on the lake, It's more just getting quiet. And I feel like it's like rebooting my mental computer because there's so much and stimulus that we have, and if you can quiet it down, that's when you can find your answers to so many questions.
Yeah.
And really important for financial decisions as well, because we make pretty bad ones when we're stressed out.
Yeah. Well, what evidence is there that this this works?
Well, there's all sorts of evidence on meditation that it helps our stress levels and that it helps our health levels. And actually, there was a book called Scarcity where the authors looked at people in dire financial straits, so really, really severe financial situations all around the world. And they found that that stress from being in that situation was so severe that their IQ actually dropped. So they were unable to make good financial decisions.
Yeah.
So if you can calm down to the best that you can, and you could start to make better financial decisions. And actually, another way to do this, in addition to meditation, is to focus on what you're grateful for. And there's been lots of research how this can increase our health, increase decrease our stress levels, and may actually help you make more money.
Oh, interesting. So what are some simple ways we can increase our gratitude?
Well, you can start a daily gratitude practice where at least think of five things every day that you're grateful for. A gratitude journal also works really, really well. And this doesn't have to be a big, long time-consuming process, but when you can take a break and focus on what is working well in your life as opposed to what isn't working, then it helps you move more in that direction.
And you also say it's important to donate, if not our money, our time.
Yeah, there's incredible work done around the topic of giving. And, you know, most people that give, whatever that means to them, again, whether it's their time or their money, do so because they want to help others. It begins with an altruistic motivation. But what we are seeing in the research is that there are sort of many benefits that come back to the giver, like a boomerang effect. One of them is in the area, actually, of health and longevity. There was a book that came out several years ago called The Longevity Project, and this was a book that studied a sample group of people for 80 years. So it was such a long study that the research actually outlasted the researchers. They actually had to have multiple teams to continue this work. And they studied these people for such a long time, and one of the big takeaways was that people that had engaged in philanthropic activity, whether that was giving of their time or their money, actually outlived people that did not. So there was that discernible of a health and longevity benefit from the process of philanthropic giving. It actually made people healthier and live longer. So there's that benefit. And then there's also even harder to understand when you first hear it. There can be an actual financial benefit to giving, which doesn't necessarily make any sense, but there's been work done by a gentleman named Arthur Brooks, who has studied this issue and has actually proven, from a data point of view, that similar families and similar demographic situations, if you have one family that's giving just, say, $100 more than the other family in the same, you know, kind of demographic situation, will have a higher W-2 at the end of that year. They'll actually have earned more money. And it's when you first hear it, you sort of think, really, you know, you're rolling your eyes a little bit. How does that work? And you could try to chalk it up to something like karma. But scientists call it something called subjective wealth. So what they're saying is that when you give, you actually feel better about yourself. You feel happier. You feel like you must be doing well if you can give financially. And that then impacts how your performance is at work. If you're a commissioned salesperson, it might influence your sales that month, et cetera. So it actually kind of manifests itself in tangible ways to the point where you actually have a higher W-2 at the end of the year. It's a interesting, fascinating concept.
We are talking with the co-authors of Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. We are talking about how visualizing our financial goals and meditating on them, reminding ourselves of them, can help strengthen our brains and the skills we need to achieve them. And we're welcoming your questions, too. We'll get into some more nuts and bolts after this break, including some specific smart money moves that practically anyone should do this year. And we welcome your questions. What personal finance questions do you have about your retirement or saving money for your dream home or your dream vacation? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.
Money, 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 money. Money's on my mind.
This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine without Kevin McKinley. Kevin will be back next week. We instead are talking with two other financial experts who are the co-authors of the book Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. And I'm curious as to why no one has any questions about this concept, this interesting concept that you should literally picture your prosperity, that you should visualize your financial future or your financial goals, be they short-term or long-term. And actually have actually frame them and be reminded of them and meditate on them. Have you done anything like this? Or what are your specific financial questions about reaching your financial goals? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Let's take a call from Bethany in Manitowoc. Hello, Bethany.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just to explain my situation a little bit, I'm 40. My husband is 43. We have three young children. I work part-time, and he works for a small not-for-profit. So we have to pay for all of our own insurance, benefits, retirement, everything like that comes out of our paychecks. So we're basically living paycheck to paycheck. We also have a mortgage on our home and things like that. We don't really have any extras. I'm just wondering, do you have any advice for us as far as planning for the future?
Bethany, hey, this is Ellen. So have you and your husband gone through the process of talking about what some of the goals you have for yourselves for the future are and for your family?
Yeah, yep, we have.
Great. So some of it is starting with whatever you can do, even if it's a small amount. So, and it might be earmarked whether it's for education or a different kind of home or whatever goals that you guys have for yourself. And what we find is that when people can set up some type of automatic savings plan, whether that's through one of your work or if you just do it on your own, so even if it's a small amount each month coming directly out of your paycheck or out of your checking account into a separate account, we found over and over that really helps people begin the process of saving. And most of the time people don't notice that money going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Ellen, so we talked a little bit about this values-based spending plan. That might be something that Bethany and her husband could go through to, if they're living paycheck to paycheck, maybe there isn't extra, but maybe they're spending something on something that isn't really important.
That's absolutely. So, Bethany, this might be a way for you to really look at everything that's flowing in, so your income from your paychecks, and if there's any other sources of income, and everything that's flowing out and where it's going. Most people underestimate what they spend or aren't very clear on it. And then once you have that information, then you can go through and we say to make them A, B, or C priorities. So if your home is an A priority, then everything that goes with it, real estate taxes or rent or whatever you're doing, insurance for it, that has to be an A priority as well. But maybe there's some other things that are less than important to you guys that you'd be willing to swap towards using those resources towards a future goal.
Yeah, it is important for everyone to have some emergency fund on hand, isn't it, Lisa or Ellen?
It is. It's one of the non-negotiables, regardless of the specifics of your situation, that we tell everyone to focus on. We actually call it a solutions fund. We like that feeling better than emergency fund. So if there is an unexpected problem, you have a solutions fund. Even if it's a small amount, to get that started and to be intentional about growing that is really a priority. That's what allows people to sleep at night.
Yeah. So, and again, just using Bethany as an example, living paycheck to paycheck, they have kids and they have a mortgage and they have, all these different financial issues going on. Maybe they can do this values-based spending plan and start saving a little bit more money toward the solution fund or for a retirement fund. But I can imagine that this is frustrating and stressful, and they think that there's no light at the end of the tunnel, that it's just scraping by. What encouragement might either of you have for them?
Well, this is Ellen. Immediately, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, some people can't even do that. Like, paycheck to paycheck is positive. It's not like they're running a deficit or running up, at least from what Bethany said, huge credit card debt. And so that's awesome to be in that much of a financially responsible position, because some people are really, and so to be focusing also on, okay, what is working well? What are they doing well? And it sounds like there's a lot of things they're already doing that are really well and building on those.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to go to Matthew and Thorpe next. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Joy. Love your show. Yeah, I'm a state employee, and I also am living paycheck to paycheck. And after Act 10, I had to file bankruptcy. And a lawyer I had said that, there's been more state and city employees since Act 10 filing bankruptcy than in this 30 years previous. And I'm living, paycheck to paycheck, living in my parents' basement, and I've got no extra money. I went ahead and I've got a little bit of savings, but right now I'm on the way to the store to go ahead and pick up a battery with it because it's the one that's in the truck died. And I need that for making firewood. And I just don't know how I can come about saving any extra money at all.
Well, have you done that values-based savings plan, Matthew? To see if there's any place you're wasting money or spending money that's not important to you.
Yes, I've tried that, and it comes down to I really don't spend any money on me.
Yeah. Well, we have some people. Again, here's someone who says he's declared bankruptcy. So, Lisa or Ellen, where does someone like Matthew start?
Yeah, so this is Ellen. I would say that it's a very difficult situation in lots of ways, and that sometimes to build financial resilience, it's the outside things that we do, like the values-based spending plan and making decisions like, okay, I'm going to ask for help from my family or do some things that I need to do to get out of the situation. And then it's the inside work about, okay, how can I build a really great inside viewpoint? This is how we're thinking about money to start to see opportunities that are out there. So this is where picturing your prosperity, creating a picture, starting to focus on what's working well for you might show opportunities that you don't even know are there. So what tends to happen is when you're focused on where you want to go, all of a sudden you start to see opportunities, whether it's job opportunities or something else that you might not have paid attention to before. It's hard to get out of a deep hole if you're looking down at how dark it is versus trying to look up and say, okay. So even if it's for just parts of during the day that the goal is, okay, I'm just going to focus on what's going well and where I want to be moving into the future and putting the worry aside for a moment.
So what are some investment options that you recommend for short-term financial goals?
So this is Ellen. For short-term financial goals, you can
You know, often it's just a bank account or a money market account or something that really won't go down in value. Because if it's something that you want to accomplish in the short run, then you don't want to take the risks of the stock market or the bond market even going up and down. So usually, certainly less than 3 years, sometimes less than 5 years, you don't really want to take risk with that money. And typically the solutions fund, that's the best place to be, even though you're not really earning any interest on that money. But you'll know it's there if you need to access it.
And what about long-term?
Long-term, there's all sorts of... I'm sorry, Ellen, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Lise.
There's all sorts of longer-term options. We actually... It's funny... We're talking about Matthew's truck and the truck battery right now. We actually make a vehicle analogy in the book between different styles of investing in different vehicles. So, again, this goes back to the area, as most investors know, of looking at your risk comfort level compared to the goals that you're trying to reach. And so we have, say, we have the most conservative kind of approach, which we call the SUV, you know, something that's stable, that's steady, that... you know, has the potential to get you closer to your goals, but maybe not, you know, going as fast as a sports car would, right? And so this is all a way to kind of think in an analogy sort of a way toward various investment vehicles, different types of mutual funds, individual stocks, and so on that you might want to buy that take different levels of risk, but also have different potential levels of return.
So what are the smart money moves that almost anyone should undertake this year? Ellen?
Save automatically is my favorite money move for people to do, to set it up on autopilot, whether that is starting a solutions fund in something very conservative or for retirement. So maybe you're investing through a 401k or a state-run retirement plan if you're in a government employee, and that might be invested more for growth, so in more stock market kind of investments, typically through mutual funds, through a plan. So that's the first thing, is saving automatically. And we also recommend setting up an automatic giving plan where you're putting money away on a regular basis to be given to people that could use that money.
I'm sorry, by saying automatic, you're saying like a paycheck withdrawal thing.
Yeah, paycheck withdrawal or checking account withdrawal. So, for example, I have money coming out of it's my business bank account, but I'm going into a separate savings account that's just for giving. And so then I can be much more deliberate in my charitable giving. I'm systematic like I am with my savings. And it really, like, loosens the grip on worrying about money, knowing that there's people that are less fortunate that I can help, whether it's a charity or something really important to me or a family member. It's up to you. You know, clearly if it's a qualified charity, the government, you can get a tax deduction usually for that. And so they're helping you save as well.
Excellent. So, Lisa, what about smart money moves from you?
You know, what we see is that if you look at the basic areas of financial planning, so we've talked about a lot of them on the show, but then there are also things like insurance, making sure that you're insured properly, estate planning, looking at your asset allocation if you're currently investing, how you're investing. Those are things that we always tell people, most people avoid their entire lives. And I know that that sounds silly, but we just find that it's quite true. It's viewed as a burden so often, as something that you have to try to make time to get to over the weekend, or maybe next month you'll really get focused on this. And then, you know, sure enough, that month comes and goes, and it's still being avoided. So I think that the best money move we can recommend to almost anyone is to create momentum, to start something, to start making a move toward one of the most important areas in your financial life, and to start going in a positive direction.
Well, thanks to both of you for giving us something different to look at.
Thanks for having us.
Been fun.
Lisa King and Ellen Rogan, co-authors of Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Caleb Lato for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.